Hey everybody, it's Steve, your co-host, your producer, and just a
weird guy
wanting to wish you guys a happy new year and to let you know that we're both really appreciative of all of the listens and support you've given us throughout this past year of us doing the show. And in 2018, we want to make the show even better. And to do that, we made a little survey, and it's going to help us get an idea of what you like and don't like about the show. It's going to be very short. You can find it in the description of this episode. It's only 3 questions, and you can even yell at us about how dumb it is. Anyway, here's to a happy 2018, and enjoy the show.
All right, you primitive screwheads, listen up.
What an excellent day for an exorcism.
Horror. There is no shortage of monsters to haunt our dreams.
Horror. You got red on you.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
Horror.
Alive, it's alive.
Groovy.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Oh the Horror. It's the horror movie podcast where we take a look at classic and not so well-known films from an expert and a casual's perspective. I'm the casual Steve Allman.
And I'm the expert Rob Holmes. And today we are talking about one of my personal favorites. And I think you loved it pretty much
too. Oh, absolutely
too,
loved it.
Steve. This is 1988's The Blob, directed by Chuck Russell.
Wow, what a... So this is also based off the 1950-something sci-fi horror classic.
1958, so this was the 30th anniversary of the original Blob. Then Chuck Russell had put this one out, and holy crap, did he up the ante.
It seems very much a... Because I have a passing familiarity with actually the classic Blob, which was basically like a creature feature from the 50s. Fairly low budget and didn't even make that big of a splash in the horror scene, it seemed.
Well, I mean, it was the big, you know, starting point for Steve McQueen.
Oh, wow.
So that was like his major role. I think that was his first film,
like his
and it
breakout
really was
role.
His launching point. Yeah, it was definitely his breakout role, and it made that film kind of stand out at the time, because he was by far the best part of the film. And then it was followed up with, I think, Beware the Blob, which was a sequel. I mean, there were a couple of Blob films that happened in the 50s, late 50s, and then early
60s. And now we have this 80s revamp, basically essentially a remake, a modern reimagining, if you will, of this classic tale. And we have essentially the 80s version of Steve McQueen, Matt Dillon in the lead.
Kevin Dillon on this one.
He's just so
brother.
Memorable. Kevin Dillon. You just have to, you know, you sometimes get the names mixed up. It's so memorable. He's so
it's
memorable.
It's true. Now, I think the most memorable part is Kevin Dillon's hair, man. I mean, it trumps Shawnee Smith's so much. I mean, his hair is, it's almost as glorious as
it trumps
the Blob
Uncle
itself.
Jesse's hair from Full House. Like, this is quite a head.
Oh, easily. Easily.
I think a better way to start off is... we've talked about before about some of these creature features and how these added in special effects that was kicking off in the 80s. I was flabbergasted at how well this movie seems to blend both the practical and the, I guess not digital at the time, but the special effect back then.
Yeah, so they had a lot of practical effects. They used blue screen effects as well at certain moments. Now, the blue screen stuff, personally, in my opinion, it's all right. It's not seamless, obviously. That it was a very difficult thing to do to try and make it seamless. But the effects themselves, I think this movie had a $19 million budget, and about $9 million of that in itself, I think, went to
the
effects.
Shows.
Oh, it really does. I mean, when the blob is especially coming up under doorways or covering people and dissolving them, holy shit, man. They really upped the gore factor, the creepy, gross-out factor. And they really are... Chuck Russell did a no-holds-barred film on this, in my opinion. It's very... He did not hold back from killing
off
characters.
Exactly, and I think that's kind of the best way to sort of sum up... what the blob is for the uninitiated, or at least for like to surmise like what its whole deal is the fact that it just absorbs people in grotesque and insane fashions and like just grows and grows and grows. And as simple a concept as that can be, it gets it takes a good filmmaker to be pretty inventive with the ways that that can be seen as an actual threat, rather than just being sort of like corny and campy.
Exactly. And now in the original one, it absorbed, and I mean, it didn't really go into the details of it because this was 1958. Now the modern one, it's basically a corrosive blob that once you touch it, it starts to just dissolve the person immediately and absorb it into itself, and then will continue to grow over and over. Now, what's fun about this film is that it throws in a lot of twists throughout. It's not a simple, oh, okay, we know who our hero is, we know, you know, what's going on. They kind of trick you right away. We're introduced to Shawnee Smith's character Meg, and we're also introduced to the character of Paul Taylor. Now, Paul seems like he is going to be your main character, your hero of the film. And then we have the badass Brian Flagg, who's the juvenile delinquent who's always in trouble with the sheriff, Herb Geller, played by a favorite of The Walking Dead, Jeffrey DeMunn. Now, what's interesting is Jeffrey DeMunn has worked with the guy who wrote this, along with Chuck Russell, is Frank Darabont. Frank Darabont was the showrunner of season one of Walking Dead.
It's a weird kind of go around with all of these types of talent that emerged from this film in the 80s.
It really is. And then if you also look at Chuck Russell, as far as what he did, he came out of the gate in 1987 by directing Nightmare on Elm Street 3 Dream Warriors, which was fantastic. It revitalized a franchise that had kind of fallen off by the second film. Then he follows it up with The Blob. After that, he did the Jim Carrey film The Mask in 94, Eraser in 96, then a couple other films, and is now coming back, actually, and directing about four more films in the next year or two. So, you know, he's had a very interesting career throughout. But getting back to The Blob, It's a fun cast, man. I mean, right off, you have Art LaFleur as a pharmacist. We'll get into that a bit. Bill Moseley appears as a soldier in this. Del Close. So I have a history of working in the improv community at Second City, and I've done some stuff over at I.O. What's interesting is in all my time there, no one seemed to know that Del Close, the guy who basically founded I.O., was even in this film as Reverend Meeker, which is a very fun, over-the-top character. And I always would ask people, hey, you guys know that Del Close is in The Blob? And most people are like, wait, what? What's The Blob? And I'm like, oh, God, guys, you here, take my DVD,
right.
Enjoy.
And to kind of add on to, like, the talent that the cast is bringing forward, I always noticed that, like, a lot of movies in the 80s, they seem to have this air of taking themselves very seriously. Especially yes. In horror films, even when they think that they've got something going on that's going well, it may or may not work out like that. I can easily tell that a movie like The Blob, like, everybody involved with making it knew exactly what kind of film they were making and just had fun with it.
Oh, yeah. The dialogue's fun. It's one of those scripts where you can definitely tell it had that Frank Darabont touch. Most of the stuff like that Kevin Dillon's character is saying in it is just fucking great, man. It's like he swipes at what he thinks is The Blob with a meat hook, and he's like, oh, great. I killed the strawberry jam.
Yeah. Like, and not even just with that, but like it's a solid script in the sense that it has every workings of like a decent like action adventure type of like monster movie with quite a few subversions of tropes and expectations with it. I've noticed like for like at least maybe 20 minutes of the opening of this movie, I did not even know that Dylan was going to be our lead.
Yeah.
I completely thought that it was going to be the jock, and it was going to be like the guy that like he's going to be a bit of a preppy jerk, and he's going to overcome all of these things and get the girl or whatever. I'm like, all right, I'm going to see this coming a mile away. Totally gets offed in a very sexual harassy type of way that is totally deserved, but
well, no, the sexual harassy type of way, that was the character of Scott who gets taken care of. Now our Paul Taylor guy, Paul is trying to play the hero with Meg after the homeless guy ends up getting this meteor crashes from the sky, it falls to the ground, this hobo guy goes around and pokes it with a stick. Then my favorite part is that there's a dog in it. The dog sees what's going on and pieces the fuck out, and we never see him for the rest of the movie. Smartest character in the entire film. So the hobo guy gets this. The blob ends up getting on his hand. It's eating away at his hand. Paul's driving with Meg. He accidentally hits the guy. He sees Brian Flag like after him, and since he's a delinquent, he's like, yeah, you better come with me down to the hospital. And you know, they go to check on the guy after he just had this thing on his hand, and Paul goes in there and the dude's been dissolved to nothing. You see the part of the top half of his body, everything else is just dissolved away.
Such a crazy good prosthetic set.
Exactly. And then Paul's like, I'm gonna call the cops, and goes into the doctor's office to call the cops, and you're like, all right, cool, Paul's gonna call the cops and we'll move on to the next thing. Nope. The blob just drops right down on him. Meg comes in, sees him being pulled and just dissolved away, grabs his arm, that pulls right off, and Paul's dead, man. Our supposed hero is gone in the first 20 minutes of the movie.
Yeah, our projected hero.
That was the moment when I remember watching this for the first time years ago and just, oh man, I was so happy because, I mean, it's a terrible thing to say, but I was so happy that Chuck Russell had the balls to say, nah, we're going to subvert expectations completely and just, you know, turn this on its head. Because you're introduced to a lot of characters in this small town, and a lot of them you're like, okay, some of these people are cool and some of these people are shitty, but you never know who's going to die next, you know? And then we have...
Yeah, and a lot of them are bit characters. Like, I've noticed that a lot of the observations from a lot of the townsfolk, like, from, again, this first 20 minutes, is just building this, like, small town world that you're getting up in. Like, Dylan's character, like, all that we knew of him in the very beginning is that he has this one arc where he can't make the jump on his super rad motorcycle and he's getting tormented by the homeless guy.
And he's a delinquent. Like, we find that out, and he's a delinquent who's been in trouble before with the ship, but the sheriff knows him real well because of that.
Yeah. By the way, way too pretty to actually be a delinquent, but we'll take it.
And then, you know, we get some really fun moments in the beginning because we have Paul's friend Scott, who is going in to buy condoms from the pharmacist, who also happens to be Meg's dad. And when he's going to buy these condoms, and the guy's like, what do you want, regular or ribbed? And he's like, ribbed. He ends up in a conversation with Del Close's Reverend Meeker character, and then throws Paul under the bus, saying, oh, no, these aren't for me, they're for my buddy Paul. He has this date with this girl, and he's looking to get some tonight. And then when Paul goes to pick up Meg, he goes in, she's like, oh, I want to introduce you to my dad. And it's the pharmacist, played by Art LaFleur, and the only thing he says, he just pulls the paper down, he just looks at Paul, and the only words, ribbed. It was such an amazing moment of that.
It's very crass and gross, but also like very comedically 80s.
Oh, it's great. And it's so great. It has that, because it has that small town 1960s vibe to it. So it has that like 1958-60 time of the original film.
Oh, it's totally Americana. Like this is clearly like the like offshoot backlot of small town Americana Twilight Zone episode.
Yeah, and it's right, you know, and we're introduced to a bunch of different people right away. We get Bo Billingsley's character of Moss Woodley, who owns the repair shop and stuff. So he's working on the cars. He's talking about, like, how they have this snow machine because it's like a mountain town and, you know, mm-hmm. they got to get ready for ski season and stuff like that.
It's so well done because, again, I keep, as I'm watching this movie, I keep getting impressed at how many plates it seems to keep spinning. Like, keep cutting back from, like, one character's, like, motivation and plot to another character's. And it's, like, it's so very well balanced and well done throughout the entire thing. When characters split up, you know exactly why they are. And then when they come together, like, they're right back on pace with everybody else. It's such a very well balanced and taut movie.
Now, when we start getting into some of these kills, I mean, we've talked about a few already. Then there's the, you know, Scott trying to date rape Erica Eleniak's character with his creepy trunk full of booze mixtures and like a box of class rings that he just does to get girls drunk and then have sex with them. But what Scott doesn't know is that when he goes out to make that drink, that blob has already basically taken over Erica Eleniak.
And as horrible as this scene is for, like, the act that is being implied, the entire full bar, like in the back of his trunk. That's
but
like,
it's fucked up.
No, it's a full on like Tommy Bahama like tropical lounge inside of his trunk, and he like goes to the trouble of mixing the drink and like putting a little like garnish of a lemon on the thing.
No,
like,
no,
he
puts a strawberry on it.
Right, strawberry.
He has a whole thing of strawberries, like. The thing about that moment is that it makes you laugh and chuckle for a second, but then you're like, oh, dude, this guy is a fucking creeper. Like,
and he's got to keep that stocked. He's got to keep those strawberries fresh. All of those things need to be, like, chilled. Like, that's going to be costing him. That's a huge, like, he had to go to West Coast Customs and get that shit done right.
Yeah. Because that was very much like, Abe definitely put so much time into making that special trunk. But then when he finally gets his, and I feel bad for Eric Galiniak's character just, like, passing out and then getting killed and dissolved, but that reveal once he tries to unbutton
her blouse. Oh, it's a super cool effect, like, that her face just kind of, like, is half over and just...
It, like, caves into itself, and the tentacles of the blob shoot out and pull him. Like, he definitely got what he deserved in one of the... You don't fully see it, but you know it's, like, a heinous, heinous death.
It's very, very good.
Yeah, that part was fantastic. But then, you know, we get into some of these later deaths. Fran, who has this, she runs the diner, and she has this kind of, like, flirting thing going on with the sheriff.
Which is very weird.
But it's kind of cool. You're like, oh, man, they're going to go out, and this is kind of cool. And then her cook gets yanked into a sink.
Oh, man, that felt
rough.
Dude,
like,
that felt rough.
Ooh. You see him get pulled in by that because you're waiting for his arm to get yanked in first. He reaches in, and I'm like, oh, shit, it's going to happen. It doesn't happen.
I'm not reaching into that thing. That looks gross enough without
that blob.
But
it didn't even matter if he reached in. The thing fucking shot out, grabbed him in the face, and yanked him down full body into that pipe and then bent it out of place just to fit him. Oh, man. It was brutal. Brutal.
Yeah. Super creative.
Yeah, and then... God, just even going through the deaths, I'm trying to think of it. We end up with Fran is trying to call the sheriff, and she's in a telephone booth, and it's covered, the telephone booth. And then, you know, when she finally gets through to them, they're like, oh, the sheriff's going down to the diner. And you see Herb has been dissolved and is, like, being pushed up against the phone booth. And then it just caves in on her and takes her out. And it's like, holy shit, they just got rid of three people between the cook, her, and the sheriff in 3 minutes, maybe?
Yeah, like, no, it was... Yeah.
Oh, it was so fast-paced. And then the movie theater.
Super fun. Oh, no, actually, I wanted to go back to that telephone booth kill, because that was super, super cool.
Yeah.
Because, again, it's showing, like, the extent of all of the bodies that's enveloped inside of the blob, while also, like... constraining and like tightening inside of this like enclosure, and then it just like pops and she gets like swooped up like that like over the top camera from inside of the telephone booth, and she just gets like absorbed into it so violently. It was absolutely incredible to see.
Yeah, and then seeing the remains of it later when it's going into the drain, and you see Del Close's character go, and we find out that, you know, cold bothers it, so he actually scoops up a couple of chunks of it, and you're like, why the fuck would you do this? But it comes back into play later.
It's shown like two times before right. Like it actually gets thwarted, because like, again, this movie's smart enough, because like I feel like in lesser movies this would just be like, oh, it just happens to be like something cold explodes and then it's dead for the first time, we didn't establish it, but like slowly people learn and they figure that out. And that's how the audience can actually be on pace with the characters in your movie. Like, that's super smart. Yeah. And, like, it makes you, like, even more attached to what's going on because you're learning with these characters.
Exactly. And then, you know, we end up with these other subplots. So we have Meg's little brother and his friend who want to go see Garden Tool Massacre or whatever that's going on, you know, at the local cinema.
A very well done spoof of a film, by the way.
Oh my God, yeah. I was just floored by the fact that they were just getting as ridiculous and campy as they were with that. And then you have one of the Frog Brothers actually plays the little kid's older brother, who's the usher.
Yeah. And that's great, because again, we were talking about like Jason being like, or Friday the 13th series probably in the height of its popularity at this point.
Yeah.
Like this would be around when 3 came out?
Oh, no, 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 no. At the height of its popularity in 1988, we're talking about...
I mean, in 1988, that would be when? Like, that's number four in the series?
No, 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 no. That's number seven in the series.
Oh, my God. Benefit of the doubt there.
Friday the 13th, Part 7, The New Blood was in 88, and then it was 89 was Jason Takes Manhattan.
Wow. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. They covered a lot of ground in one decade.
Mm-hmm, because it started in 1980 was the first one, and then it just kept going year after year, except I think they skipped over one year.
Jeez.
Yeah, it was insane. And then, you know, we finally get to that subplot, and then we have the subplot of the military, and we find out that the blob was actually a bacteria that they just launched it into space to see how it would evolve, and it crash landed, and that's what it turned into. So we find out there's this government conspiracy going on with it as well, and we're introduced to Joe Seneca's character, Dr. Meadows.
God, awesome.
Oh, man, he's so great in it. He's just like...
He's got the voice for it. He's got the cadence. He's got, like, there is stakes in his voice.
Yeah. Eerie, man. He's eerie. He has that, like, super creepy... You know he's the bad guy.
Yeah.
You know, you're like, oh, he's the scientist. Oh, my God, no, he's an evil scientist.
Because, of course, they're trying to fight the Soviets.
Yeah, exactly. And then the military's like, oh, this will put us leaps and bounds ahead. And they're like, dude, we can't contain this thing. Oh, we can totally contain it. Okay, well, you'll learn your lesson soon enough.
Yeah, it's going to happen.
And then... Once the blob hits the movie theater, though, it's like all bets are off. That people are getting taken out left and right. We have the character of Hobbs, who is the projectionist, who has his yo-yo.
Oh, that's super fun. Because, again, everybody's got their little bit. Everybody's got their thing that makes it so much that more memorable.
Well, it feels like no two deaths are the same. Like, the way he got dissolved and absorbed into it was different from the way... That even the kid, so we get, I think the kid's Eddie or something. So the kid who is friends with Meg's little brother, you think, oh, they're not going to kill a kid. They're not going to kill a kid. They're not. Nope. They just totally dissolved a kid.
Yeah.
And you see it in all of its glory when he tries to come out of the water and he is like half of his face is dissolved. We see a jaw hanging off like. They did not mess around.
No, it's great. And then when we get to see, I emphasize this because each one of these characters, however brief that you know them, whenever they're on the screen for a second time, you know exactly what they're about. Especially the sheriff, because I think this guy looks like he's probably in his early 30s, but he is, like, characterized as if he is in his mid-50s. Like, he's balding. Like, he has this very creepy look about him. Like, he's clearly, like, He looks like he's like a shitty corrupt cop.
Are we talking sheriff or deputy?
Deputy.
Yeah. Well, he is because Paul McCrane was also in RoboCop, man.
Yeah,
he was on ER for about for a while. He was the guy who got his arm sheared off,
right,
by the helicopter blades.
And the second that he gets involved with the blob's actual involvement in the town, and they're like, "All right, we need to save everybody," like he kind of puts all that bullshit to the side and like actually steps up in a weird way.
Yeah,
I'm like, okay, cool. Like you're not actually shitty. I was weirdly invested in all of these characters and seeing them come together. Yeah. Like it was actually cool.
It was fun. It's a lot of fun. And then you know, characters just get taken out left and right, so no one is safe in this film, and that's what makes it really great and puts the terror in this movie that a lot of these other films don't have, because you never know who's going to die next. You know, your supposed hero gets taken out. Your, you know, hero sheriff guy gets taken out. A kid gets taken out. Like, they just don't care who goes at any time. And then I love the Bill Moseley, which nowadays I would consider it a cameo, but at the time I guess it was, you know, whatever role he was able to get.
Yeah, a supporting role, you could say.
Yeah, if you guys haven't seen it, he's always wearing a mask, but he's the one who has the rocket launcher strapped to his back that Brian Flagg's character pulls out at one point and launches up to get out of the sewers when they're trapped down there. But also, you know, we finally get Kevin Dillon doing that jump on the motorcycle. He prepped it in the beginning, and he finally makes it.
And he gets his arc, and he gets his redemption story.
Yeah, yeah. And what's also great is that something about this film is, you know, at the end of it, you know, Kevin Dillon and Shawnee Smith make it out, and they're able to defeat the blob. She's the one who is all, like, he brings out the, she's like, yeah, the cold, okay, it's the cold, it, you know, cause she figures out when she's spraying it down with a fire extinguisher, and they realize it's CO2. And so Flag ends up taking the snow truck, tries to crash it into it, gets stuck. Man, she's just like, screw this, grabs a machine gun, tries to lure it over.
Super awesome.
And then is going to try and jump off, gets caught, and you think she's going to end up getting killed. And then luckily, you know, Brian's able to get out and save her. The whole thing explodes, and it freezes into these amazing purple crystals. And it's just this, it's this awesome moment because Shawnee Smith goes from being just the basic cheerleader character that we think to a total badass.
Well, and she's been growing through that the entire film, mm-hmm. with like rescuing the kids and going off on her own and being like, and not like giving in to any like fear or just like having to be an easy kill at some point, like off the death of a kid right in front of her to actually like go forward and keep saving the rest of the town. Like, it's super cool to see that.
Yeah, and then the other great part is that, you know, at the end of it, Shawnee Smith and Kevin Dillon, they don't get together. They're not like, you don't see, they hug at the end, but they're not like making out or anything where it's like, oh, it's they're in love now. So they got rid of that basic trope of, oh, they always have to fall in love at the end, which I thought was fantastic. You have Del Close getting set on fire at one point, and he ends up getting put out, and you're like, oh, okay, he lives. Yet, you know, we find out at the end he's still got that, those chunks of the blob, and apparently they were, I guess they were trying to lead up to a sequel.
I'm sure
a potential sequel about, you know, revelations happening and
leave it open ended and
yeah. And I thought that was really cool. It was a good little tagger at the end.
Yeah.
Instead of a traditional jump scare, it was like, oh, this could be leading to how it ends up. The blob could still exist, because the smartest thing that happened right away is once the blob is frozen, the character of Moss Woodley is like, well, we better get this over to the ice house before morning.
Yeah, that's that's a very, like, and just put a bow on that conflict. Like, there's just going to be this giant blob frozen in this small town forever.
Until they can figure out kind of what to do with it. I mean, you still have... you have people who have been, you know, half of the soldiers have been killed and off and everything like that, and most of them are dissolved. And, you know, some of these reveals that we get, and going off onto some of these kills again, just like in the movie theater when Meg goes over to this girl and is like, oh, are you okay? And, like, rolls her over and half her face is gone and fully dissolved. People's arms are fully dissolved, like when she's grabbing the machine gun. Turns out the guy's still alive, but he's missing, like, one arm and both of his legs have been melted away.
Yeah.
Like, they outdid themselves on this. But the problem was, this movie was way ahead of its time.
It feels ahead of its time. Like, I feel like this was made in, like, the mid-90s stuff going on.
Yeah, but the problem is, it was a box office bomb. It did not make nearly enough of its money back.
That feels insane to me.
Yeah, I mean, this was kind of the end, you know, at the end of the 80s, this is kind of how it was. Opening weekend, let's see, it was a budget of $19 million. It only grossed $8.2 million.
Oof, that's bad.
Yeah, I mean, it was rough. The end of the 80s was kind of where, you know, the big boom of splatter films kind of had its time end by maybe 87. And they were still getting made, but they just weren't pulling in the numbers that they needed to pull in.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting. Well, that's a shame. And I hope that it lives on, because this is easily one of the most recommendable films that I've ever seen on this podcast. Like, this one is crazy good.
It's so much fun. And, like, the fact that we get a cameo by Jamie Newlander, who was in The Lost Boys year before as one of the Frog Brothers. And apparently then after that, he just stopped doing movies for, like, 2 decades. But... to me, it's a cameo because he played an iconic character previously and then just plays this small bit part. I know it was only his second movie role, but it's like, yeah, it's cool to look back at that type of stuff.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that we could probably end on the fact that, like, movies like this are kind of the things that are like the fun offshoot like, mm-hmm. but still, like, in the, like, the main, like, zeitgeisty canon of, like, popular movies back then, which isn't yeah. really done as much, where yeah. it's, like, this high budget, this seemingly higher budget B-movie that a lot of big names are in just for the fun of it.
Oh, yeah. Well, and some weren't big names at the time and are now when you look back at it, but...
Like, they were coming up. They had their time.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It was definitely a lot of up-and-comers, and this movie's just a whole lot of fun. It is the epitome of splatter horror. This is what... There needs to be more films like this. Now, I know they're talking about doing The Blob, doing another remake of The Blob, which, you know, it's been 30 years again, so it seems like every 30 years we're going to get a version of The Blob. Now,
timely enough.
I really hope that they go with these practical effects, because the practical effects in this are second to none.
Like, they stand the test of time for sure.
This is definitely up there with, like, John Carpenter's The Thing as far as practical effects go.
I'd buy it. Yeah.
Yeah. It fits in that same realm, and that to me is what makes it extremely iconic. So, if you haven't seen it, which you shouldn't have listened to this if you hadn't seen it, but if you haven't seen it, see it immediately. And if you have seen it, watch it again, because it's amazing. And
keep it in your collection. This is one that you can pull out and, like, say, like, all right, this is a good gem that I can show off to my friends.
Exactly. Buy it on Blu-ray, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that is going to do it for us here yep. at another episode of Oh, the Horror in the Bag. For that, I've been Steve Allman.
And I'm Rob Holmes.
And we'll see you next time, everybody. Thanks again.
Look at me, Damien. It's all for you.
Horror. Come, it is time to keep your appointment with the Wicker Man.
Horror. When there's no more room in hell, the dead will walk here.